Chapter 45.
Spence, you first, Hicks said. I'll give you a boost.
She moved up so she was standing with one foot on the very tip of the tower.
And turn off the magnetism, he added.
She obeyed, and Hicks shoved her at the open airlock of the interceptor, still slowly coming down. Whoever was on the stick was a goddamn good pilot, he thought.
You next, he told Bishop. Don't argue. I outrank you.
Yes, sir, Bishop said as Hicks boosted him up by his good leg. Above them, Spence was leaning out of the airlock, arms reaching for them. Bishop took her hands and Hicks kept hold of Bishop's good leg, firing one last shot at the aliens on the tower. It was like that old game, Hicks thought, Barrel of Monkeys. And he couldn't help laughing as Spence hauled him and Bishop into the airlock. Just before the outer door closed, he caught a glimpse of a pulse cannon descending from a panel 2 meters to the right. Then the hatch shut and the thump, thump, thump of the weapon firing on the aliens made them bounce all over each other in the tiny space while air rushed in. The inner door opened and a skinny, tattooed arm reached down, grabbed Spence by the back of her vac suit and dragged her into the cabin. As Hicks helped Bishop up after her, he heard scratching noises, first on the hatch, then moving up the sides of the interceptor. Come, come now! A woman's voice shouted at him and added something else in Vietnamese. Hicks wasn't fluent, but he knew enough to understand she was telling them to haul ass unless they wanted to get violated to death. As soon as he hoisted himself into the cabin, Spence slammed the inner door behind him and locked it. Hicks removed his helmet and looked around. The woman with the tattooed arms was in the pilot's seat. She yelled something else, then cut off sharply, listening to the sound of claws moving up to the roof. Bishop called to the pilot in Vietnamese. She swiveled around to the control panel and tapped a series of buttons quickly. All at once, Hicks found himself tumbling backward along with Spence and Bishop to fetch up against some cabinets in the storage area. They all heard claws scraping the length of the spacecraft as the creatures tried to hang on. Hicks estimated they were at 3 G's before the aliens finally let go.
Tell her to fire on them, Hicks said to Bishop, straining to get the words out.
Bishop obeyed, and they heard the thump, thump, thump of the pulse cannon again as the acceleration began to ease off.
I don't think we have to worry about them surviving, Bishop said. They'll get pulled into the implosion. We can't leave even one of those bastards floating around, Hicks said. If it gets picked up by someone looking for salvage...
He saw Spence looking up at him.
Ripley told me what happened when just one of them got aboard her ship, the Nostromo, and that was before they could survive in a vacuum.
Spence nodded. Yeah, I know. She got to her feet and unzipped her suit a few centimeters, fanning herself with one hand. But if it's okay with you, I need a break from saving the human race from extinction. Not long, anywhere from 15 minutes to, say, 5 years.
Me too, Bishop said.
Hicks and Spence both turned to him in surprise.
As I said back on LV-426, I may be synthetic, but I'm not stupid.
He looked at his left leg where it lay in a bizarre zigzag.
Could someone help me to a chair?
Spence spotted a wheeled stool locked to the wall, pulled it out, and helped Hicks get Bishop situated on it. Then they rolled him across the cabin and parked him next to the pilot. A quick look at the console told Hicks the interceptor was a model he was familiar with, albeit out of date. He moved around to the pilot's other side and pressed a panel. A small flat screen popped up from the console, displaying a view of the starry black space behind them.
Increase magnification? He asked the woman.
Her glare said she didn't appreciate his taking liberties with her console, but she did as he asked. One of the stars in the center of the screen suddenly swelled and became anchor point. What are you looking for? Spence asked. She had barely finished speaking when the entire screen went white.
That, said Hicks. A wave of intense relief washed over him, and suddenly he had to sit down on the padded bench against the wall. Good work, Bishop, he said, his voice shaky.
Bishop dipped his head noncommittally.
I try.
Sitting on the floor to one side of the console, Look High watched the robot as it bent over the open control panel. Occasionally, it would pull up a small circuit board embedded in a tangle of wires and carefully disconnect each one, then reconnect them in a different order. The robot had told her the problems she was having in the navigation had been caused by the destruction of Rodina Station, or rather, by being too close to it. Yesterday, she would have already fixed the problems herself. Now, she couldn't muster enough energy to think about them.
just keeping the interceptor on course with the glitchy navigation had worn her out. She'd gone to Anchor Point hoping for help. Instead, she'd ended up rescuing the last two capitalists left alive and their robot, the same damned machine she had delivered to them only a couple of days before. Merely an astounding, against-all-odds coincidence, or a karmic wake-up call? The UPP disdained things like karma as superstition, but Rodina Station was gone, leaving her alone in a universe dominated by capitalists. If there was some significance to this, she didn't know what it was. Maybe significance came later, in retrospect. Either way, it wasn't her concern. She wasn't going to last long enough for hindsight or even to tell her part of the story. Maybe they would do her the honor of commemorating her along with their own people, while Boris and Ashok and all the others sacrificed on the altar of Suslov's ego would pass into obscurity, their lives unacknowledged and their deaths untold. History was written by the victors, i.e. the survivors, and she wouldn't be among them. She had no history anymore and no future, only the here and now, for however long it lasted. Her gaze drifted back to the robot still at work on the console. She trusted it completely. Machines knew machines, and whatever was wrong, the robot would fix it, if only because it was programmed to keep the man and woman safe, acting as their servant and guardian. Capitalists. Did they have any idea what this arrangement looked like from the outside? They had built these so-called intelligent machines, insisting they were equivalent to humans, citizens even, and then made them into a permanent servant underclass. And yet they claimed to adhere to the principles of justice, equality, and freedom. But any society that had masters and servants could never be just, or equal, or free. Not even if the servants were machines. Well, if these two expected her to treat the robot like a human, they'd be disappointed. They could indulge themselves in any way they chose. She couldn't stop them, even if she wanted to. But she wasn't going to validate their master and servant mentality by anthropomorphizing a machine. The man, Hicks, sat on the bench against the opposite wall, close to where the robot was working. Spence, the woman, was stretched out with her head pillowed on his lap. She had lain down right after Anchor Point had disappeared and was still deeply asleep, her face relaxed and peaceful. Lukhai wondered how she'd take it when she woke up and found herself back in the same bad dream. Considering the woman had stayed alive long enough to be rescued, Lukhai thought she would eventually recover. She just had to let herself, which was the tricky part. So much easier said than done. When this was over, she'd have her whole life ahead of her to figure it out, except it wasn't over. Not yet. They hadn't reached a safe place, and there was no guarantee that they would. Shit happened, even without aliens. Still, she envied both Spence and Hicks anyway, wishing she could have faced the end with someone she cared about instead of dying among strangers. Capitalist strangers. Her eyes fell shut. Bishop? Hicks's voice sounded far away. Are Spence and I... Are we... There was a long pause. Are we infected? The question pulled her back from her oncoming doze. She opened her eyes to see the robot had put down its tools to fish something small out of an inner pocket of its spacesuit. It held the object under the high-intensity lamp, and Lukhai heard a pleasant bell chime. Setting the item down on the console, the robot shook its head. No. Are you sure? The man's face was wary. I am, the robot said. I used all available data to calculate a solid set of parameters on the incubation periods for the various forms. Neither you nor Spence is a carrier. It tilted its head toward her, nor is she. Lukhai could see Hicks untense. You set an alarm? He asked. Yes, said the robot. My internal chronometer confirms it, but I knew you'd feel better if I gave you something concrete, like a watch. Hicks laughed a little. Can't beat a watch for the right time. The robot reached into another pocket in its vac suit and came up with an automatic. Lukhai recognized it as a standard Colonial Marines weapon. To her surprise, the robot offered it to her, handle first.
Zuna, nakong koet voitoi,
she said.
Keep it. I've got no use for it.
A powerful wave of fatigue swept over her, and she let her eyes fall closed again. The voices faded away.